Paradise of apples. Easy to remember because apples are the only food here. They are special apples, of course, growing only in snow.
Look, Agatha heard Annadil say. Isn't that the Camelot seal?
In the middle of the endless snowfield, a grey horse dappled with white spots was tied to a wooden stake. On its back was a leather saddle and blanket embroidered with the crest of two eagles flanking a sword. The horse paid them no mind, noshing on a bucket of bright green apples.
Must have been Chaddick's horse, Dot said.
Thank you, Lady Obvious,
Hester sneered, clearly smarting over their earlier exchange.
But if that's Chaddick's, then who's feeding him? Bucket's full and those apples look freshly picked.
Agatha was thinking the same thing. Chaddick couldn't have picked apples for his horse this morning, because Chaddick wasn't alive this morning. Her chest squeezed, the moment hitting her. Soon they'd see the Lady of the Lake's gates, and if they found a way inside, soon they'd see Chaddick's body too. In the distance, she finally made out the bone-white castle built upon a bluff above stormy grey seas. The crash of waves echoed with deafening booms as colossal iron doors covered in snow swung open, hard against the rock, lashed by the wind.
Crack! Crack!
The gates are open, Agatha asked, surprised.
Lady opens gates for Ajubaju. Gave shelter to my family once, knows me well.
The beaver said quickly.
See the rock around castle? It is no ordinary rock. This is Rakari rock. No magic can be done inside its boundaries, only by Lady of the Lake.
Doesn't make sense, Agatha whispered to Sophie. Her castle is supposed to be sealed. It's King Arthur's resting place. It's good's most sacred hallows. Why would she open her gates for a beaver? Maybe she has a soft spot for vermin. She does let Merlin in, after all, said Sophie. But Agatha was looking closely now at the snow-piled doors ahead as they bashed open against the rock. One of them was sunken, like it had been hit by a cannonball. And the other was crumpled. Iron fragments lay half buried in the snow.
You said our friend asked lots of questions, Agatha prompted, turning to the beaver. What did he ask?
Ajubaju stopped mid-sentence, frowning.
Said he was here for school quest on behalf of Camelot. Wanted to know if anyone had broken into the Lady of the Lake castle. I said, clearly they must not teach about Lady of the Lake at school. No one can break into Lady of the Lake castle. I will talk about Lady later in the talk.
Talk about her now,
Agatha demanded. The beaver puffed loudly and waddled ahead.
Lady of Lake is Good's number one most special top defender. She was born with beauty, immortality, and infinite magic. But she is cursed. If she ever kisses a boy, even once, she will lose everything. So she hid in Avalon, free from temptation.
He explained.
Lady of the Lake will always be Camelot's guardian, because Camelot is Good's oldest kingdom. Even from afar, Lady protects Camelot by giving King her sword of power and her waters as shelter. Even more important, She protects the Four Point, most sacred land in woods. Four Point is site of King Arthur's last battle, where he received mortal wound protecting balance between good and evil. As long as Lady of the Lake alive, Four Point is safe and Camelot is safe. That is why Lady must be secured. No one allowed here except Merlin and the King.
And you and your tours, said Agatha sharply.
Which I explained already,
said Ajubaju even sharper.
Come, I show you what your friend was looking for.
Agatha watched the beaver carefully as they moved through the gates. He's lying, she thought, peering at the splintered iron. Someone had broken in. And yet the beaver had clearly met Chadwick and earned his trust. How else would he know so much about him? Warily, Agatha followed the group as they walked the path around Avalon's towers. These white spires were all connected into one circular palace with no windows or doors, overlooking a maze of zigzagging staircases. She could see the entrance to the stairs ahead, leading down to the lake where the lady lived. Agatha's stomach knotted. It's where Chadwick's body would be. Luckily, most of the crew was listening to Ajubaju babble about the history of Avalon and hadn't noticed the stairs. But Sophie had. Aggie, she whispered, clutching her arm. Is Chadwick... you know... Agatha subtly leaned over the edge of the path. Through the crisscrossing stairs she started to get a glimpse of the grey-watered lake and its snow-heaped shore far below. Agatha held her breath, her gut twisting harder. Her eyes flared. Chadwick's body wasn't there. Where is he? Sophie breathed, sidling next to her. That's where the Storian drew him. Right by the water. Aggie, we should look for him. No, Agatha ordered. Stay with the group. Not that Agatha had any intention of staying with the group herself. The Storian had told them Chadwick would be here. And the Storian was never wrong. Chills rippled down Agatha's spine. She needed to get to the Lady of the Lake. Surely she would have answers. But Agatha didn't want Sophie or the others to come, not when she didn't know what else might be down there. It was too dangerous. All the storybooks I've read said the Lady of the Lake is immortal, she heard Nicola telling the beaver. Don't say anything about losing powers if she kisses a boy, 'cause she's been around thousands of years and... never is gonna kiss a boy, Willem chipped in. Storybooks don't waste ink on something that'll never happen.
Like you not puking every time the boat moves, Bogdan cracked.
Willem kicked him.
Or like the Lady of the Lake becoming schoolmaster,
Hester said, glaring at Dot.
We should at least ask, Dot said, appealing to Anadil.
She's the Lady of the Lake, you lump,
Anadil scorned.
Lady or not, it sounds like she needs a kiss, said Hort, puckering his lips,
to which Nicola made a farting noise and Hort poked her playfully. Sophie gagged.
This is what your friend was looking for,
Ajubaju said, stopping abruptly. The crew stopped joshing around. Agatha gazed up at the fortress of white towers.
Said he'd been following the attacks in woods,
the beaver went on.
Lots of kingdoms having trouble lately. Attacks on both Evers and Nevers. Your friend thought whoever was doing attacks might be hiding in Lady of Lake's castle.
How could someone hide here? There's no doors or windows to get inside, said Nicola, knocking on the tower's solid walls.
Ah, the beaver grinned. That's where Pretty Lady needs tour guide.
Out of his pocket, Aju Barju drew a white, five-pointed star the size of a sand dollar. Sophie instantly recognized it as the same kind of star that Merlin had once laid in honor at King Arthur's tomb.
Hey, how'd you get that?
She said as the beaver pressed the star against the wall. But the star was already glowing, as if burning from within. Little by little, the outline of a door whittled into the stone around the star. The beaver pressed hard, and a door creaked open where there'd been no door before, just wide enough to let someone through.
Lady of Lake must have let your friend inside, the beaver said. We can go inside too, if you like. Maybe your friend's still there.
Agatha was hardly listening. She was staring off towards the stairs. Horse, apples, no body. Is Chadwick still alive? But the quest map said he was dead. And so did the Storian's painting. Had there been a mistake? Eyes wide, she glanced back at the newly opened door in the tower. Is the beaver right? Is Chadwick inside?
Agatha?
She looked up and saw her crew watching her. Come on, we have to trace his steps, she said quickly, waving them in. One by one, the crew followed the beaver into the towers. Agatha hurried in last, cramming through the stone door. She stopped short. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw a drop of blood in the snow behind her, near one of the beaver's webbed paw prints. Sliding out the door, she dug her clump into the soft whiteness and swept off the top layer. Crimson soaked the path below. As she watched the others move into the tower, Agatha followed the trail, chipping away snow with her clump and uncovering a streak of red down the stairs. There was so much blood. Chest pounding, she descended the stairs.
What happened to stay with the group?
Sophie snapped, bumping next to her. Then Sophie saw the blood. Go with the others, Agatha said tensely. But Sophie ignored her, rushing down the icy steps and slipping hard. Agatha seized her arm before she could fall. Sophie gave her a sheepish glance, then charged ahead. Agatha held on, stumbling after her. Like it or not, this was a team effort now. Coming down the jagged staircase, Agatha could see the mist of their twin breaths. Avalon was dead quiet, save the few pigeons on the staircase banister and the ripples of water below. Beneath the drab skies and white towers, the only flashes of colour were the shiny green apples growing off rocks and the trail of blood down the snow-slicked stairs. Together, the two girls followed the stream of red, step by step, until they reached the bottom. The Storian painted him right here, Agatha said, rushing to the water's edge. She cleared away the mound of fresh snow on the shore. Sophie, she whispered. The outline of a boy was framed in blood next to the lake. Only there was no boy. He was here, said Agatha. He was definitely here.
He still is.
Agatha looked up and saw Sophie was a sick shade of white. Sophie raised her finger, pointing behind Agatha. Agatha turned. Deep in the corner, against the staircase wall, Chadwick sat in the shadows. He had his knees to his bare, broad chest, his back flat against the stone, his eyes wide open. He was holding something between his hands. "Chadwick?" Agatha gasped. She rushed forward, diving into the snow and grabbing him. He was stone cold. His skin looked waxy and colourless. The gash in his flank turned rusty brown. He gazed right at them, his pupils big and glassy. "He's dead, isn't he?" Sophie said softly. Agatha's heart caved in. Of course he was dead. Storian was right. The Storian was always right. Except, how did his body move? Agatha asked. He died over there. The Storian said so. Someone must have moved him after he was dead. But why? Sophie asked. It doesn't make any sense. Then Agatha saw what Chadwick was holding. A folded piece of parchment. She pried it out of his stiff fingers and held it to the light. Someone had drawn on it. "It's the Camelot seal," said Agatha. "But around the sword, now there's snakes. The snake knows we're looking for him," Sophie said, ashen. Fingers quivering, Agatha turned the page over. It was one of the beaver's maps of Avalon, streaked with Chadwick's blood, fingerprints smeared through it. Only as they looked closer, they saw they weren't fingerprints. They were paw prints. Paw prints that looked a lot like the ones belonging to a beaver they'd just left with their friends. The two girls locked eyes, faces dawning with horror. Then, they heard someone scream. Chapter 12. Sophie. First Loyalty. "Sophie, hurry!" Agatha called far up the steps in front of her. "It's these blasted shoes!" Sophie moaned, slipping on stairs like a cow on ice. "Who told you to wear heels?" More screams rang out from inside the tower. "Sounds like Nicola!" cried Agatha, speeding up. Sophie frowned, slowing down. "Well, in that case, move, you fool!" Agatha berated. Sophie scurried after her, resorting to crawling on her hands and knees, wondering how she was huffing like a hog, while Agatha, who ate every cookie in a 50-mile radius, was sprinting up the stairs with ease. But soon she reached the top and was hustling behind her friends towards the stone door, still open a sliver. Both girls threw their weight against it, barely shoving it ajar, before Sophie's heels lost traction in the snow and she face-planted with a shriek. By the time she staggered up, Agatha was already inside. Sophie squeezed through behind her. It was pitch dark.
"Aggie?"
Sophie wispered. "My finger glow won't light," Agatha said nearby.
"Magic doesn't work here, remember? Raccoon Rock, or whatever he called it, doesn't allow magic inside its bounds." "Aggie? I can't see anything. Where are you?"
A cold hand seized her wrist.
"Listen.
Agatha's voice said. Then Sophie heard it, a hissing sound somewhere far away, or was it buzzing, like a set of pipes leaking air? Another scream echoed, this time a boy's. Come on, Agatha said, yanking Sophie down the tunnel. I hate it when you treat me like your sidekick, Sophie said, stumbling behind. I'm a dean, and you're not even queen yet. If anyone's a sidekick here, it's... They slammed into a wall and careened to the ground. In her haze of pain, Sophie thought they were back at school, foiled by the invisible barrier on Halfway Bridge that had set their original fairy tale into motion. But as the pain wore off, she could feel Agatha lumber up next to her, hands on the wall. Sophie heard that strange hissing behind it, along with muffled voices.
They're inside. I hear them, she said.
She thrust her ear to the stone, trying to hear more, and felt it creak under her weight.
It's another door, said Sophie, surprised.
But there's no handle, said Agatha. On the count of three, push as hard as you can. One, two,
on three or after three?
After three, you dolt.
So on four? Really?
No! After three!
Let me count then, said Sophie.
Hurry, you idiot!
One, two, three!
They shoved the door as hard as they could and plunged through into a blitz of daylight.
Watch out!
Hort's voice cried. Toppling forward, Sophie snagged Agatha by the waist, trapping her in place. The two girls froze like mannequins, muscles clenched, breaths held. Their bodies were an inch from being impaled on a blood-stained sword, planted handle first into the dirt of a stone cave that opened into grey skies and a view of Avalon's coastline below. The sword had Camelot's seal on the hilt. Chadwick's sword. Curled around it were two king cobras hissing with forked tongues, mimicking the warped Camelot seal they'd seen on the map in Chadwick's dead hands. Behind the sword were dozens of treasure chests hanging open and empty, with black velvet lining inside and the same snake and sword emblem carved on the outside. But that wasn't the most ominous sight. Because as Sophie peered closer, she saw now that the chests weren't empty at all. The black velvet was moving. Snakes, hundreds of them. Thin black ribbons slowly slithering out of the chests and slipping into the sand.
Don't move,
said Nicola's voice above her. Slowly, Sophie's eyes lifted and saw the crew clinging to icicles on the ceiling of the cave.
They're asps. They only see motion,
warned Nicola, hanging on the same icicle as Hort.
I read about them in The Brahmin and the Jackal. No one cares, Sophie retorted. All we care about is, are they deadly?
Why do you think we're up here, you oaf?
Hort lashed.
Beaver trapped us while you two were off kissing somewhere.
Sophie's eyes bulged. Not just because Hort had never been so rude, but because even if the asps hadn't spotted her and Agatha, the cobras had. The two bigger snakes flicked off the sword, coiled in the dirt, and slithered towards the two girls.
Aggie?
Sophie hissed, watching their hoods spread with fiery red and orange patterns. She and Agatha stepped back, but the cobras accelerated, fangs gleaming.
Agatha?
The two snakes split paths, each heading for a different girl, faster, faster, like eels gliding through sea.
Agatha!
The cobras launched for their throats, jaws wide. Agatha threw Sophie out the door and heaved it closed, hearing the cobras' bodies smack against stone. Sweating hard, Agatha shouted through a slit in the door.
Where's the beaver?
Escaped, the sleazy trash ball, Hester spat back. Managed to get him by the neck with my legs for a second, long enough to squeeze him into confessing that he got paid to kill us. Someone in a green mask. Didn't have the faintest clue who the guy was. Said they all get paid for the attacks.
Who's they? Sophie asked.
Everyone who's been attacking our friends' quests and terrorizing the kingdoms. Snakes behind all of it,
said Hester, still in disbelief.
Snake recruited this army of goons to throw the woods into chaos. Forget that we spent 3 years trying to keep balance between good and evil. Apparently there's a whole lot of creeps out there who don't have any loyalty to either side if you pay them enough. You thought Arik was bad? At least he had a cause. This lot can be bought.
The echo of hoofbeats cut her off. Inside the cave, the crew turned, looking out the opening. From outside the door, Sophie could see through the cave opening too, down to the faint outline of a beaver, astride a grey horse, galloping along the coast and out of view.
"Guess that answers the question of who's been feeding the horse," said Dot.
"I'm losing grip,"
Annadil yelped. Hester swiveled to her best friend, slipping off a melting icicle, her three rats hanging by each other's tails. Hester spun to Dot.
"Turn it to chocolate. Something she can hold."
"First, it'll melt, and second, magic doesn't work here," Dot railed.
"I'm gonna fall,"
Annadil gasped. Without thinking, Agatha pulled at the door, about to rush in, but Sophie yanked her back.
"You'll get killed!"
Agatha kicked the wall in frustration. "In storybooks, what kills snakes?"
"Handsome princes with swords,"
said Sophie.
"What kills snakes?"
Agatha shouted into the cave.
"Lions," Dot replied. "That's what the lion and the snake said." "No lions here,"
clipped Bogdan, wrapped around Willem's icicle.
"What about cats?"
said Agatha.
"Reaper hates snakes." "No cats,"
said Bogdan.
"Demons," said Hort. "In Bloodbrook, that's how we get rid of..."
"Magic doesn't work,"
said Bogdan, nodding at Hester's dormant tattoo.
"Instead of telling us what doesn't work, why don't you tell us what does?"
Sophie yelled through the door.
"Look, any moron knows only one thing kills snakes in fairy tales,"
Nicola exploded, as if she couldn't take it anymore. All eyes shifted to her.
"Well?"
Sophie bellowed.
"Mongooses, for God's sake,"
Nicola blared.
"It's always the mongoose that kills a snake at the end of the tale. Haven't you heard of Rikki Tikki Tavi, or Indira and the Mongoose, or the tales of Panchatantra? Don't any of you know anything besides Snow White and Rapunzel and stories about creamy fair princesses?"
"No mongoose,"
Bogdan quipped.
"Wait, yes mongoose," Agatha said, spinning to Sophie. "Where is he?"
"On the boat, obviously. He's steam cleaning my boudoir. After the storm it smelt of fish,"
Sophie said. The whole crew groaned.
"So we have no weapons, no mongoose, and no plan. What do we have?"
said Agatha.
Hello, little chickadees, a sing-song voice called.
Jolted, Agatha and Sophie put their eyes to the door crack and saw a vision of Princess Uma's olive-skinned face floating in the cave.
Professor Dovey asked me to let you know she's running late, said Uma,
framed by the dean's alarmingly messy office.
She's dealing with a few never boys who tried to feed Professor Manley to a stimpf. I only just got back to school myself. Had to miss the first weeks of class because, well, it's personal. But I'm here now, and why do you all look so grim? And why are you hanging from lanterns? And is that licorice under your feet? Sorry, it's quite blurry from my side. This crystal ball is ancient.
Her face distorted, turning upside down.
Sometimes, if you give it a good joggle...
She was flung out of the way by Professor Dovey, more disheveled than ever.
Those are snakes, she squawked, peering through the rip in the air. And the children are hanging from... Dear God! Uma, you speak reptile. Put them to sleep or something.
Princesses don't speak snake, Clarissa,
Uma huffed, tugging at her smooth black hair.
But I do speak a great many other animal languages, including...
I don't need your resume, Uma, and please get out of my way!
Professor Dovey scolded, clawing spellbooks off her shelf.
Surely there's a sleeping hex in here that will work on snakes.
Uma started to wail loudly. Sophie could see Agatha gnashing her teeth. If there's one thing they both hated, it was thin-skinned princesses.
I can't hold on,
Dot howled, backside sagging 2 inches above the snakes.
Hurry, Professor,
Agatha shouted into the cave.
What's that, Agatha?
Dovey said, hand to ear, but Uma was mewling more than ever.
It has my pants,
Dot shrieked, an asp's fangs digging into her breeches.
Hurry, Professor,
Sophie hollered.
Uma, I can't hear a word. If you don't stop, you're crying.
Crying? Uma scoffed. I'm not crying. I'm calling a friend.
Friend? Dovey wheeled to her. Our students are about to die, you ninny, and you're calling a friend?
Suddenly, behind Dovey's bubble, a fleet of tiny furry heads poked over the cave hole in a perfect circle, like synchronized swimmers, echoing Uma's wailful call. A white one with beady eyes took in the scene.
Hardip,
he squeaked.
Uma friend.
Motilal,
said the next.
Uma friend.
Ganashanathan. Uma friend.
Pushpa. Uma friend. Ramanujan. Uma friend.
Gutlu.
Uma friend.
Santanam.
Una friend.
And finally, one black as night, smiling pearly sharp teeth.
Bubashwa. Uma friend.
Princess Uma smiled into the crystal ball.
Close your eyes, children. This could get messy.
The snakes unleashed a panicked hiss. Like cyclones, 8 mongooses swung into the cave, screeching so loudly that Sophie and the crew not only closed their eyes, but also plugged their ears. 5 minutes later, Hort and Willem swept bloody asp and cobra carcasses out of the cave while Bogdan sliced fresh apples with the tip of an icicle and fed them to the exhausted mongooses. Princess Uma thanked her friends with a few short wails and promised to officiate Bubashwa's wedding to Pushpa later that month. Then Professor Dovey's face, already beginning to fade, looked down at Sophie and Agatha, who had finished explaining everything they'd faced in Avalon.
"Girls, our connection will end soon," said the Dean quickly. "From what you've told me, this snake has trespassed into Avalon, killed one of our own, and wants Tedros's crown. And he's throwing the entire woods into upheaval along the way. He's attacking kingdoms, he's attacking our students. Just this morning Kiko's team didn't appear for its check-in with me, nor did Ruvan's team in Akgul. And I'm quite sure the snake has something to do with it. Luckily both teams are still alive on my map in their respective kingdoms, so they could just be hiding. I'm looking into it. But whoever this snake is, he's the worst kind of villain. He's a terrorist." She took a deep breath. "And all you know is we're searching for a man in a green mask?"
"Or a woman," Sophie ventured.
"And you're sure they've left Avalon?" Dovey pressed.
Agatha and Sophie exchanged looks. "Can't be sure of anything anymore," said Agatha. "But the beaver made it sound like he was long gone."
"The Lady of the Lake would have never let him or the snake in," said Dovey, dismayed. "Have you gone to her?"
"Wait a second,"
said Hester. She was crouching near one of the chests. Inside it was a single, ragged gold coin. Hester held it up to the daylight. A skull with crossbones glimmered on its face.
"Pirate gold,"
said Anadil. Her rats sniffed at the chest and tittered at her.
"They say all of these were filled with pirate gold. Those asps must have been protecting it."
"Pirate numbers are growing in Jaunt Jolie,"
Hester said, remembering the newspaper she'd seen in Eternal Springs.
"Snake has to be paying them."
Anadil swiveled to Hester.
"Jaunt Jolie is one of the kingdoms bordering the Four Point. Didn't the vizier in Kyrgios mention pirates lurking about sacred land?"
"If the snake is planning something at the Four Point, you need to head him off at once," said Professor Dovey urgently. "The Four Point is where Arthur intervened to end a war between four kingdoms over a small piece of land. He gave his life to bring peace. Since then, the land belongs to Camelot as a symbol of its leadership of the woods, beyond good and evil. Any breach would be a declaration of war on Camelot, not to mention a shattering of the truce. The Lady of the Lake vigilantly protects the Four Point, but it sounds like the snake has his eyes on it. You must find out what these pirates are up to."
"Then we're off to Jaunt Jolie," Agatha said, eyeing the vial on Sophie's necklace. "Whose quest is stationed there?"
"Oh, no," Sophie croaked. "Beatrix." "And judging from the fact that some of our quest teams aren't communicating with me, Beatrix's team may be in danger, too," said Professor Dovey. "Make haste to your next kingdom and find her. I won't be able to check in with you for a few days. My crystal ball only lets me use it a certain amount of time each day, and tomorrow I have to use it for..."
She didn't finish.
"Professor, is there no way to get a new ball?" Dot prodded respectfully. "Along with a new cooking pot, new wand, and new maid for your office."
Sophie murmured. Professor Dovey was fading faster.
Listen, my children. Every second you spend in that cave is one more second a steadfast ever of good lies unburied in the cold. All I ask is that before you leave Avalon, you give him a worthy goodbye. Go to the Lady of the Lake. Find out how a boy of our own came to lie on her shores. At the very least, she must help you bury him.
Professor Dovey choked up, her face translucent.
He is worthy of a home in the same grove as King Arthur, for he was a devoted friend to his son. Chaddock was an honorable boy. He didn't deserve to die alone. I should be there with you to pay my respects. I wish I could, but I'm doing the best I can.
Tears filled the dean's eyes as if she could say no more. Then she was gone.
Lady of the Lake, are you there?
Sophie asked a third time, her foot dipped in the glacial grey waters. But again, the lady didn't answer. A few minutes earlier, the crew had each taken a private moment with Chaddock to honour him. When it was her turn, Sophie had kneeled down and taken his rigid, chilled hands in hers.
Thank you for being such a faithful, valiant friend to Teddy. A better friend than I've ever been, that's for sure. We'll protect him for you now, okay? And in the end, you'll be the reason we were able to save him.
She kissed his cheek.
Wherever you are, you'll have no pain or bad memories any more. Only love. And one day, me, Teddy, and all the rest of your friends will be with you again. Not too soon, of course, but one day. So wait for us, and watch over us if you can.
When she was finished, Agatha kneeled in front of Chaddock. Then Hort kneeled, then Hester, then the others, one by one, even those who hadn't known him. They washed Chaddock's body clean with lake water, and fitted him into Hort's clothes, leaving the weasel pink-skinned and shivering in his underpants.
"Always lose my clothes anyway, so it might as well be for a good cause," he'd said.
The boys lifted Chaddock's body and lay him gently on the lake shore, the water lapping up to his side. Without the use of magic, they could do little else to adorn him, but Nicola combed his hair and Bogdan smoothed his shirt as the rest watched Agatha step into the water and call out for the Lady of the Lake to help bury their friend. The lady didn't answer. And now she wasn't responding to Sophie either.
"Maybe if we go farther in,"
Annadil offered.
"Come on,"
Hester said, grabbing her and Dot and hauling them into the lake. Dot squealed, arctic water up to her thighs, but she gritted her teeth and ploughed forward. Sophie remained with Agatha, watching the witches wade deeper. What do you think Dovey meant when she said she's doing the best she can? Agatha asked.
Before you arrived at school, she told me she couldn't come on this quest because it was our fairy tale, not hers. But I'm starting to suspect there was another reason she had to stay behind, said Sophie.
Is she sick?
Can fairy godmothers get sick? Besides, she doesn't look ill. She looks chaotic, as if her mind is elsewhere, Sophie said. But what could be more important for a dean than protecting her students? Lady Lesso lied to a deadly schoolmaster to keep her Nevers safe. She betrayed evil itself, a cause she'd worked for her whole life. She betrayed her own son. And though I hate saying this, Dovi is just as good a dean as Lady Lesso. Which means there's something else wrong with her. Something she isn't telling us. Do you think it might have to do with that crystal ball? Even if it's broken, a crystal ball should help her, not leave her frazzled and overwhelmed. Agatha shook her head. I'm scared, Sophie. You heard Dovi. She's never seen a villain like this before, and if she's not at full strength to guide us... She paused. The woods is under siege. Our friend is dead. Quest teams are missing. And Tedros is alone at Camelot with this snake plotting to destroy him. We don't know who the snake is. We don't know what his plan is. All we know is we're in a fairy tale again, and this time the villain is playing games with us. She gazed at her friend. It's as if there's no such thing as a happy ending anymore. Or perhaps we've traded in good and evil, black and white, happy and unhappy, for 1,000 shades of grey, said Sophie.
Hey, guys, Hester's voice called.
The two girls turned and saw the three witches looking back at them, chest deep.
There's someone out there, said Hester.
Sophie stepped forward, squinting past the witches across the lake. Then she saw it. 100 yards away, a silhouette, hunched on top of the water. She couldn't see whose it was. She couldn't even tell if it was man, animal, monster. But whatever it was gave her a dark feeling. I'll go, Agatha started. I'll go too, Sophie said without thinking, clasping Agatha's wrist and dragging her past the witches and Hort, who'd rushed to follow. The icy water knifed through Sophie's dress as she swam, but she didn't make a sound nor stop swimming, her breaths achy and shallow. But then something curious happened. As the two girls swam farther, Agatha sank like the others down to her neck. But Sophie didn't sink at all. Her body started floating higher, higher, magically sloughing off water, until suddenly she was walking on top of the lake as if it was solid ground. She looked down at Agatha, dumbfounded. Agatha seemed equally stunned, as did the rest of the crew, but there was no time to ask questions. Go, said Agatha quickly, but be careful. Sophie swallowed hard. Then she kept walking. The lake felt rubbery under her heels, and baffled fish ogled her from beneath the surface. Under dreary skies, the figure ahead remained cloaked in shadow as Sophie grew closer, closer. She could see its stooped back, wrapped in soaked grey robes. The ominous churning in her stomach deepened.
Hello?
She called out, inching nearer. No answer. From behind, the figure had scanty knots of white hair, a shining skull gleaming through.
Can you hear me?
Sophie asked. Still nothing.
I'm here on behalf of King Tedros of Camelot, Sophie rasped, mouth dry. We're looking for the Lady of the Lake. We need her help burying our friend in King Arthur's gro-
An old hag spun to face her, milk-white flesh hanging over bones and ruined with warts. Her teeth were rotted away, and her coal-black eyes and thick, peeling lips hung open in a foul, empty gape.
Sophie ate her own scream and stumbled back, bracing to run. Wait, the hag said. Sophie froze. The voice was low and husky. And beautiful. It was a voice she knew. Sophie inched back around. It's you. You're the Lady of the Lake. I'm sorry for not letting the others see me like this. But they wouldn't understand. The Lady of the Lake said softly. You are the only one who knows what it's like to lose who you are. Except you found your way back to your true self. I never will. This is permanent, Sophie said, staggered. But I saw you. Merlin brought us here to hide us in your waters. You were beautiful and magical and powerful. You didn't look like this. The lady sagged deeper, glancing away. He said he loved me. That if I protected him, he would save me from my eternal loneliness. And I believed him. Jadek, Sophie said, but he... No, said the lady, her voice catching. Not him. Who then? And what does love have to do with... But then Sophie remembered what the beaver had said when they started their tour. A tale of how the Lady of the Lake came to be. You kissed someone, Sophie breathed. You lost your powers. It's why the gates to Avalon are open. The lady's eyes were bloodshot and wet. I thought he'd take me away from here. That's why I gave him shelter. Sophie's heart started hammering. You kissed the snake. You gave up your immortality, your magic, to kiss a monster. Do you know what he's doing in the woods? Do you know what he did to our friend? She caught herself. Wait a second. If you kissed him, that means you saw him, without a mask, and you know who he is. You saw his face. And it was beautiful, the lady said, beginning to cry. I know you won't forgive me for letting your friend die, but I had no choice. Sophie stared in horror. You watched Jadek get killed. And you didn't help him. The lady sobbed harder. Blood scorched through Sophie's veins. Once upon a time, she too had been willing to commit any evil for love. But this was Excalibur's maker. This was good's great defender. You watched him die. For a stupid kiss, Sophie seethed. You vowed to protect Camelot forever. You vowed to protect its king. It's not that simple, the lady stammered into her hands. I had to protect him. Even Merlin would understand. I had no choice. You keep saying that. I had a choice. You had a choice. We all have choices. And you let a boy be murdered inside Avalon. Why? Because the snake was pretty? Sophie snarled. Jadek was the liege of King Arthur's son. Jadek was Tedros's knight. That is your first loyalty. No, said the lady. My first loyalty is to the king.
And Chadwick was the king's best friend.
Sophie spat.
A king you promised to defend until the end of time. Chadwick had Tedros's trust. Chadwick had Tedros's faith. What does a snake have?
The Lady of the Lake slowly lifted her head. The light had gone out of her eyes, replaced by a cold, dead glare. He has Arthur's blood, she said. Sophie bleached white. The voice ripped out of her. What? I'll take care of your friend as you ask, the lady said stonily, turning back around. It's the only power I still have. Sophie couldn't breathe.
But...
The Lady of the Lake vanished. Shaking, Sophie whirled to the shore and saw Chadwick's body vanish too. And all that was left in her blurred, darkening vision was Agatha in the water, flailing towards her as if her friend knew something had gone terribly, terribly wrong. Chapter 13. Tedros. Like father, like son. Tedros was dripping blood all over the castle and he had no idea how to stop it. It wouldn't have happened if he'd just stuck to the routine. He'd gotten up at 4:30 to exercise in King's Cove, but as he'd snuck his way to the basement pool, he sensed that festering dread in his stomach. The dread he'd felt ever since Agatha left a week ago. He'd lied to Lady Gremlaine and anyone who'd asked about the future queen, saying she'd suffered a bout of homesickness and had taken the Igraine to Woods Beyond to see some old friends. Luckily, the newspapers hadn't reported any sightings of her, so he'd held firm to his story, insisting she'd return any day. He couldn't admit the truth. That Agatha was on a quest to save his kingship, while he stayed behind like a lady in waiting. On their last night together, Merlin had told them their friends' quests were all failing and that Tedros's own failed coronation might be part of a bigger story. Any real leader would have instantly set sail for the woods to find this story, to find the villain behind it. But Agatha had insisted she take his place, and he'd gone along with it, because he was afraid to leave Camelot without a king. At the time, he was sure that remaining at the castle was the right decision, but ever since Agatha had left, he'd been having dreams about his father again, silently glaring at him with those harsh blue eyes, eyes that Tedros had gouged out of his statue in order to stop these dreams. So why did he keep having them? Was it because his father would have never let Guinevere hijack his quest the way Tedros had let Agatha? No matter how dicey the situation at home, his father would have forcefully addressed the masses, explained the threat that faced them all, and convinced his kingdom to await his return. Tedros had done none of those things. Instead, he'd helped Agatha escape like some piddling sidekick, distracting two guards on the bridge while Agatha boarded the Igraine with Willem, silently turned it invisible, and went off to sea. First, he'd almost gotten his mother and Lancelot killed at his coronation by ignoring everyone's advice, and now he'd put his future queen in danger by passing off his own quest to her. Both times he'd thought it was the good thing to do. But why did good things keep turning bad? Tedros's mood spiraled as he padded down the gold tower stairs in his black socks. For the last few days he'd hardly been able to focus on his royal duties and kept hounding guards to see if any letters had arrived. The guards already had little respect for him, given his botched coronation and constant deference to Lady Gremlane. But now he'd been hearing them gossip that instead of a real king, they'd gotten a love-whipped pup. That idiot Pollux had encouraged them before Tedros had him fired.